At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
It is June 1863, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. June 11th, to be very precise. And word comes that Robert E. Lee and 75,000 Confederate soldiers are east of Pittsburgh and coming our way. What is to be done? I welcome Selina Zito, writing for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, the Washington Examiner, the New York Post, to take us to how Pittsburgh worked for the next 3 weeks to prepare for the end of the world if Lee closed on with 75,000 on the manufacturing, the foundries, the people of Pittsburgh. Selina, a very good evening to you. Thank you very much. This is a wonderful story that people can attend today, I understand, because some of what was achieved in those 3 weeks exists. First of all, how was the town for responding? Was it ready to surrender? Was it ready to fight? And what did they do? Good evening to you.
Good evening. Thanks so much for having me on. You know, Pittsburgh went into, if you read the old newspaper accounts of the day, they went into a panic. However, they weren't completely unprepared. Federal government knew that the Confederates, even before they ceded, had devised a plan and done reconnaissance work to look at Pittsburgh as a place to fight a battle. The city remarkably came together in such a way that you couldn't even imagine it today. They shut down every business in town, as well as every brewery and distillery and tavern, because there was no drinking going on, because they were having every available man, young, old, black and white, to build 37 redoubts, earthen forts to protect the city. And that's not a very achievable thing if you know the topography of Pittsburgh. There's lots of hills, there's lots of valleys, and there was a lot of industry. This was be just ahead of the Industrial Revolution, but industry was really beginning to take shape in Pittsburgh. And Pittsburgh had been very instrumental in supplying the ammunition and the guns that were needed for the Union forces. So the entire city shuts down and they begin building these forts, 37 of them. It was reported at the time the temperature hit 111 during those 2 weeks that these men were building these forts.
You spoke with the historian and curator, Michael Krauss, at the Soldiers and Sailors Memorial Hall. Is this story told at the Memorial Hall and so people can go there and hear all of it?
No, very few people know about this story. And I always find that so remarkable that this is not a well-known story. In fact, after I wrote the story, I was contacted by several teachers across Allegheny County wanting to include it in their curriculum next year for the students. Even the mayor and the county executive emailed me and said, I had no idea. So, you know, that's one of the benefits of being a nerd like me, right? You know these lost stories. But, you know, it was not a well-known story. After they've built the fort, after Lee is retreating from Gettysburg on July 4th, those forts remained largely forgotten. In fact, the most significant thing they were used for was on that 4th of July, where they shot off rockets to celebrate not just the 4th of July and the country's 87th anniversary, but also in relief that Pittsburgh was not invaded, and to celebrate their own accomplishments by building all those forts.
Yes, Lee's army. Lee made the decision to turn west, turn east, and go towards Philadelphia, the large industrial city of the North. Capturing Philadelphia, it was understood in 1863, would end the war and force Lincoln to negotiate with the Confederate States. Lee did not turn west and go to Pittsburgh. On his way east, he met a crossroads called Gettysburg. That story continues with Selina introducing us to Ebenezer McJunkin. Who is that, Selina?
That was my great-grandfather times four, or times two. He served in Gettysburg, but even more notably, he went on to serve as a member of Congress after the American Civil War, and then as a judge. So he led a life of service.
We come back to the response of Pittsburgh on that afternoon of June 11th and for the next 3 weeks. It wasn't until the July 1st gunshots were fired at Gettysburg that Pittsburgh could reason that at least not coming our way. So the meeting at Monongahela Courthouse, the decision to build forts, what did they build and what is it today, Selina? You played on these as a child. Tell us what it looks like.
So of the 37 forts, two still retain their original structure. Fort Childs, which is located on top of a hill that is nestled inside a housing project on Pittsburgh's north side. In fact, as a young child, I picked blueberries by that, or raspberries by that fort. And it was very, very much in, structurally sound, and still is, because it's very isolated. If you crawl to the top of it, you can see the entire city of Pittsburgh, and Fort Croghan, which is in the Stanton Heights area and is still remarkably intact in a wooded area on the corner of Stanton Avenue and Morningside Avenue.
These are mounds. I see the photographs from the 1860s. These are mounds of soil that they piled together. They didn't have steam shovels, as my memory, so
right.
They did this by hand. Gathering the fields for 3 weeks. You said that no whiskey was permitted. I hope lots of water in those temperatures.
Yes.
Today, are they covered with grass? What I have as a reference is what Valley Forge looks like, where I spent my childhood pretending to be defending America from the Redcoats. So they're rolling mounds, or is it a plateau? Can you see where the cannons would have gone?
Yes. If you look at the two that are standing, they are rolling mounds. You could see where the men would overlook. Also, the cannons would be perched. The rest of the 37 have either eroded away, or houses sit on top of them today.
And the reason Lee might have come to Pittsburgh is that you had a cannon foundry. You had lots of people. You were a building city. And afterwards, to your measure, we've talked about this. The country was deeply divided, similar to some of the things we can see today. Did Pittsburgh come together after this united experience of hastily building 37 forts? Do the newspapers reflect the town spirit?
Yeah, they really do. The mood was very patriotic. And there was this sense of being part of something bigger than themselves. Pittsburgh housed a lot of Confederate prisoners of war. Almost all of them were, generals, and had this odd way of letting them, when they were in jail, they treated them very very warmly. Not that they were supportive, but they let them walk about town during the day. They just had to be back in the prison in the evening. So it was a very, very odd kind of set of circumstances, but somehow it worked.
And all these decades later, more than a century, we're into the end of our second century, you say the school teachers have contacted you. Is there a ceremony in some way to celebrate this, or could there be? Because Pittsburgh's part of the war.
It truly is. I was contacted by numerous amounts of teachers wanting to know how to get more information. In the story, I hope people go and read it at selinazito.com. I put together the original map and then put beside it today's map that shows you where they all are. So the ability to take the kids on a field trip to go and see them is easily done.
Selina Zito of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, the Washington Examiner, and the New York Post reporting on the Battle of Pittsburgh, June 1863, and they won. I'm John Batchelor.